You're listening to a podcast of The View, brought to you by the Church of the Larger Fellowship. To find other episodes of The View and to subscribe to this podcast, visit questformeaning.org/VUU.
We have special guests today. Do you want to introduce yourselves?
Yes, who should start? Hi. I'm Natalie Fenimore, and I'm on Long Island in New York.
And I'm Jessica York, and I'm calling from Birmingham, Alabama.
Both Natalie and Jessica are longtime, two of my heroes and religious educators that are extraordinary in their work. So why don't you both just delve into how you see religious education within Unitarian Universalism. I do believe it's an engine of growth, which Bill Sinkford has said for many years, and I've heard other people say. So jump right in there.
I serve as the Minister of Religious Education at the UU Congregation at Shelter Rock. And so from my perspective, as both a longtime religious educator and someone in ordained ministry, I like to talk about what we do in religious education as a ministry, as an essential part of how we are to be in relationship to one another. When Jessica was talking about how you can legislate behavior and how behavior can change you inside, I think we need to talk about that in sort of in religious terms as well, that our faith is in many ways a faith of orthopraxy as opposed to orthodoxy, meaning not right thinking, which is orthodoxy, but right action, which is orthopraxy. And in that way, religious education is central to that. It gives you an experiential way of being a Unitarian Universalist. And by that doing, you start to frame questions and live into those answers. So you change your heart by your actions. We're not the only faith tradition that does that. That is, for the most part, the Jewish and Muslim experience. They are orthopraxy. You are asked to do, and by doing, believe and grow deeper and deeper into your belief. And I think we are like that, as opposed to, sort of coming in and saying from the beginning, this is what I believe. You know, we're asked to live into it, to breathe it, to use our bodies and our minds and our hearts to become, we become Unitarian Universalists. And we commit and recommit and recommit. And so our religious education programs, our faith development structures, are about that lifelong experience of becoming, re-engaging, recommitting, born again and again and again. That sort of, I think, is where we are. And recognizing that means that we have to make space in our communities, which means both in our RE space, in the congregation as a whole, and in our connection with the community, we have to make space for those experiences, that outreach, that growing, because you need space to grow. Mm-hmm. You know, you start in a little pot, and then you get to be a bigger plant, you need a bigger pot. So, we might start with kids who are in a nursery room, but they need to be able to grow and have more space. And if we just think about what we're doing is only being in the RE classroom, we're really not understanding how much space we need to become Unitarian Universalists. So from our youngest to our oldest, we have to give the maximum amount of space, the maximum amount of opportunities for interchange and development, for experience, for learning, for hands-on. I do believe that we probably need to do a little bit more in understanding the need for an embodied faith experience, because we're not, historically big on that embodied thing. But we need to have that. You know, people need to touch things and touch each other and cook and clean and garden and, just feel it in themselves in the way that for a Muslim, they pray in a particular way. So your body moves in a particular way, and you come to know that movement as an invitation into prayer. Catholics have a particular way in which they move through their liturgy. It's to know that this is to make that space in your body for that. And we need to do a little bit more about that, and I think. And from what Meg was saying, for our kids who are out there doing the work of justice, their bodies are preparing them. The marching, the being, it's preparing them for that faith place. I guess I also want to say that in Unitarian Universalism, we often don't appreciate the way that religious education community builds and makes a space for people to be leaders in the future in all sorts of areas of our congregation. I like to say that the first place of welcome and the most essential one is when we invite someone to leave their baby in the nursery. That handover and how that's done says who we are, and that we're welcoming and that we're loving. Because for a mother and a father to hand over the most precious thing they have to somebody for an hour so that they can sit and have a quiet time away from that baby spiritually, they have to feel really secure. So from that first handover, we are saying who we are as a faith community. And then that first handover is an invitation for that person to eventually end up as president of the board, which is what they often do if that handover is successful, right? And so we have to understand that from that first thing that we're doing in religious education community, we are setting the stage for every other action and interaction that we're going to have going forward, right? And that we're setting people from that beginning on a path where they're going to be the leaders in our congregation. And that importance, we have to hold that importance from the very beginning of our interactions with our families.
Natalie, what's your sense of how the state of religious education across the denomination, from the largest and most organized churches that I think are moving into new territory with RE, that's really exciting, down to our smallest churches where sometimes it's maybe our smaller mid-sized churches where it seems, my observation is that there's a lot of stuckness in age-segregated classrooms, little workbook activities, not too much creativity going on in the teaching. You know, I mean, what's the state of this? You know, as a preaching minister, I look out and I go, well, there's great preachers, and then there's lots of places where there's not great preaching. Is that your sense of RE, that there's great RE, and then there's places in our movement where we're that are lagging behind?
Well, I think our congregations, of course, in congregational polity, people have the ability to structure their programming, their ministries, in a way that suits their congregation and the needs of the congregation. I think our needs around faith development are very varied.
Mm-hmm.
I think, though, that we need to understand, at least I try to get people to understand, that the real curriculum is the interaction between the people.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes I think that people can overlook that as the real curriculum. And you can still, you know, if you don't have the resources, if you don't understand resources, if you don't, you know, talk to Jessica the way you should, you may be using old materials, you may be doing something, but the core of what we're trying to develop is an understanding that individuals are the real curriculum.
Can I just testify there? Because I say amen. I grew up in Charleston, West Virginia, in this little UU congregation with like a bunch of kids and really like a dingy, moldy basement and old curriculum. But what Natalie said is so true, that the curriculum was the congregation to me. And it was this will shock you, it was a really activist congregation there in West Virginia. And that's what I learned our faith meant. I mean, there was a lot of racial justice work going on there from there, and risk-taking, and watching the adults support each other to take risks and do stuff and create stuff. And That absolutely is what I remember from their lobbying, for God's sake. The first time I ever lobbied was then. Not that little dingy room. That's not what I think about when I think about religious education for me and why I stayed. It had nothing to do with what I sat in a classroom and learned.
And some of you may have heard the analogy that Pamela Wilson uses when she talked about our whole lives. And the analogy that she uses really is appropriate, I think, for religious education and faith development also. She says, when you go to the opera, you come away from the opera and you've heard some music and something may be stuck in your head. And so you may find yourself humming the music when you come away from the opera, but you don't necessarily remember the words because you've only heard them once. And so much of what we do when we are working with individuals in religious education is that we are hoping what they're going to take away is the music, even if they don't necessarily take away the words. So you need to be paying particular attention to the music that you are playing. And that music isn't just played in an RA classroom. That music is played in the entire congregation. It's one of the reasons why I do use the terminology faith development in addition to talking about religious education, because sometimes when people hear religious education, what they envision in their mind is children sitting around the table learning about UU history or world religions or the Bible, and we do that in our congregations. We sometimes sit around the table and we sometimes talk about those things. But what they're not always thinking about is that larger curriculum that children are engaging in, which is the life of the congregation and what all that they are learning from that. That is not just education for education's sake, so that we can say that we know a certain amount of things. It's all about what you do with that knowledge. And so they are learning, yes, we hope, but they're also experimenting and they're experiencing and they're reflecting and they're affirming and they're rejecting. And along the way, they are growing, yes, growing in their belief system and in their faith, which to me is all about knowing that the journey of life that you're on has some meaning and has some purpose. And you're doing that, and you're not just doing that, of course, when you're a child. You're doing that as an adult, too. And hopefully, as an adult, you are engaging in some activities that are different than what you've engaged in before. I had a great conversation with a friend yesterday about growing new neural paths and how doing something that's totally different from anything you've done before helps to grow new neural paths in your mind, and how important that is for keeping our minds young and active. So definitely across the age span, and if you think about it, not just happening in a classroom, that is happening all over the congregation and every place that they are interacting with each other, then you can see that it's really important that we understand that it's lifespan. This is going to happen the whole life long.
And Jessica, can you give your title? You haven't said your title and your very important role to our denomination.
I'm the Faith Development Director at the Unitarian Universalist Association. Yes, I didn't say titles at the beginning because I don't think anyone else said titles. so I was following the law.
For us, Jessica.
If I had a title, I would have said it.
and you know, I want to say something else about what Tom was saying, but I know, Natalie, I think you have more to add too. But Tom, so much of what I know about the state of Unitarian Universalist religious education or faith development right now is anecdotal. And that's very difficult, right? It's difficult to build from that place. So one of the projects that my office is currently involved in is to try to get a good, accurate accounting of who is the person assuming some responsibility for religious education in every single one of our congregations, and to reach out to those people and offer some surveys so we can get some hard data on exactly what people are doing in religious education. And another thing that we are going to be doing in April is that we are conducting an innovation and faith development roundtable, where we are inviting some people who we know are doing some experimental things and things that are kind of outside the box, some of which may be working and some of which may not be working. And we're going to have some discussions with them about, you know, what enabled you to try something new and different, and what have you learned from that, and how can we spread those learnings across the religious education field within all of Unitarian Universalism? So we are trying to get some good information that will help us with that. And I could say something more too about professional religious educators and the value they give to this work. But first, I think Natalie wants to say something more, so I'll come back to that.
I'll start with where you were, Jessica, about professionalism. I'm a past president of LARETA, the Liberal Religious Educators Association, so I'm very committed to us having a professional UU religious education staff as much as possible in our congregations. I do think that our model for not just Unitarian Universalism, but all religious institutions and many social justice institutions developed in a time when there was a ready supply of volunteer, largely women, who were home, and that is not the case anymore. And many of our congregations are struggling with the transition where they don't have the volunteer base in the way they had it before. The UUA, the Faith Development Office, has done a great job in having resources available that, like Tapestry of Faith, that are online that people can use to quickly bring up to speed their volunteers. Because people don't have as much time for preparation. They need to themselves have a faith development experience, which I think Tapestry of Faith has done a great job of inserting in it a faith development experience for the volunteer teachers who are there. You know, so but to have professional people who can work in our congregational staffs and in our UU communities to help people understand. When Tom says, you know, as a preaching minister, I do this or that, you know, part of what I do is work with the other ministers here on staff and to fill in the places and things that they are not as aware of about faith development. So I am preaching on Sunday and having a lot of conversations about how when I am in the pulpit, part of what I want to do is link the various communities that I know about, that I have primary access to as a religious education minister, to make sure that the Sunday experience there in the worship room is truly multi-generational, and that my experience as a religious educator, as a preaching minister, come together in a particular way. Not to say that it's better or worse than anybody else's way, or not to say that I'm a greater preacher or not, but I do have a particular orientation toward, you know, trying to make it a family experience there. And I hope that in my working with the other ministers here in the team and other ministers I've worked with over a decade, is trying to bring in that understanding that one thing we can provide for people is a family worship experience, is an experience across generations. People are desperate to be together, to have an enhanced family experience. I was meeting with a group of elders yesterday, and they told me that what they want is to see the kids. That how can we facilitate that? We're one of the few places as a faith community, the few places in our culture where people can perhaps, if we try, be together across generations, across genders, across sexual orientations, across races, across, you know, that's what we're trying to do. I am still trying to hold on to my hope that we can still have that old belief that we are trying to make present a foretaste of heaven, and that that is our job, that we fall short of course, because we have congregational meetings and stuff, but committee meetings, but which we hope are not in heaven. However, what we're trying to do is to do the thing that's the hard thing to do, to make the space to do that being together. I think we suffer from our history, where we our foundational UU way of doing Sunday separates people. And we have to work against that, because now people really need one another.
Now, do you see congregations doing that? I'm wondering if maybe some of the newer ministers with some different models are doing actually intergenerational, you know, not just 15 minutes, sing them out and they're gone, but kind of meaningful.
I think people are trying. I do, like I say, I think it's hard because our foundational organization as Unitarians, more than Universalists, but definitely as Unitarians, as Protestants, separates people. I think we do have to revisit some of our foundational religious education understandings about at what ages and stages people should be together and how early children can understand and be involved with theological issues. I do think that I have to say that for myself, I'm not a big Foz, Sophia Foz follower, because I do think that we can drop that age where we engage in religious conversations with children. I think we can do that much earlier than she envisioned. And we miss an opportunity by not doing that. So I do think there's a lot of conversation in Lareda, in the UUA Faith Development Office. I think that Jessica and her staff try very hard, are very present in our communities, trying to push that envelope, trying to ask people to engage in new and different ways, trying to be aware of generational change and societal changes that we have to incorporate in the way that we, do, what Sunday school, and the way that we do church. I think that the Faith Development Office is really leading the way, making sure that we bring those new efforts in, and I hope that everybody is paying attention and trying out those things. I think we need to be less afraid of trying things.
Right. Well, and I think some of those new ways of doing things involve new ways of being in community, because we are seeing that people are probably a little less likely to come to a brick and mortar church on Sunday morning. So what does that mean for us being in community? Here at CLF, you guys have been practicing for some time what it means to be in community, though you're not necessarily sitting next to each other in a pew. And so I think a lot of what we do need to explore is what does that mean, and how can we form community even when we're not physically together in a church seat, congregational seat on Sunday morning. Maybe it's addressing community in different ways. So we know that there are people who are sponsoring meetups in various cities. I convene a virtual community of Unitarian Universalists of Color, another way that people can come together. Maybe with young people coming together in conferences or summer camps needs to take on a different meaning or value than it did before. And so I think that's definitely one of the areas that we need to look at. I also think it makes a big difference in terms of how you're going to try to address this multi-generational community when you have someone who is intentionally focused on it, which kind of brings me back to some of the conversations we had about professional religious educators. Part of the data that we hope to obtain is, how long are people staying in this profession? And I know that when I first started as a religious educator, I was told that, the turnover rate was something about every 3 years for the average religious educator. And I think my personal experience has been that having access to professional development, having people who've encouraged me in this profession and have mentored me in this profession has made all the difference in terms of my staying dedicated to it. And I think that we need to put some of our resources, dedicate serious resources towards making sure that we do have people who are dedicated to being that, you've got your preachers and then you've got your teachers. So we want to make sure that we are dedicating some equal resources there to the people who are going to be those teachers, working with not only our children, but also working with our adults. Many people come to Unitarian Universalism and sometimes they're so happy that they have found some place that feels like a spiritual home for them. And we know that not everyone in our congregation discovered Unitarian Universalism. We've got lifelong unity within our congregations too. But some of the people who I think particularly feel like they've discovered a spiritual home where they thought maybe none existed for them before, they're so happy and they're so relieved. And so the feeling is, I've arrived home, as if it's a stopping point. But it's not, right? Because there's a journey there. So we also have to be working on helping people deal with some of the the bad feelings or the baggage or the negative experiences that maybe they brought with them in order to more fully enjoy the life of the congregation or the community that they are now a part of.
I'm wondering, I want to, if you, with your permission, go on a little bit of a different direction. I'm really curious about what you think about our young adults who come through the program, go to college, and that's it. We never see them again. And I've seen recently in other denominations examples of really where this energy and the idealism is really fostered, and they're creating opportunities for young people to really dig in, like a year of service or creating intentional communities or whatever it is. And I was wondering what you see in your view of the landscape that is really working for keeping our young people or you know, feeding our young people where they are and our young adults.
So I think there's been an increase in terms of campus ministry and what people are doing in campus ministry. I mentioned, you know, Our Whole Lives earlier, and bringing Our Whole Lives to campus ministry is certainly one way that we have tried to keep people connected to the faith and to keep feeding them, basically feeding their faith as they are young adults. One of the people who I hope to have represented at the Innovation and Faith Development Roundtable is a member of the Lucy Stones Cooperative, which is a group of people in the Boston area, a group of primarily young adults in the Boston area who are intentionally living together in a house, and a second house soon to be added to that venture. But
we had them on the show a couple weeks ago, actually.
Oh, you did? Okay.
Yeah, right. Yeah, we love those guys.
Some people know. I mean, they are just very intentional about living their faith.
It's like a better version of Hopedale.
I think it's fantastic, you know? And so thinking of some different models and different ways to meet people where they are, I think is what we need to do. I know that there are entrepreneurial ministry initiatives that are out there, so there are people who are thinking creatively about, you know, meeting people where they are and giving them what they really need. And, of course, a big piece of that is to ask young adults what they need and to let them say what they need and to follow their lead in that. And Natalie might have something to say about that, but I also don't want to forget that Joanna had a question. After.
Right, she had her question. Well, I want to say quickly that part of understanding, I think, where we are with young adults is first owning up to the fact that we had a model that invited people to leave the congregation. We had that model, and we need to change that model. And we also need to understand that we may be gifting a young adult Unitarian Universalist to a congregation not our own. So we have to become much more comfortable with the idea of things like Lucy Stone, of communities that may not be brick-and-mortar-based congregations. So how do we, to be, you know, sort of very basic and honest about it, how do we get our congregations to understand that they are going to have to put out a certain amount of effort and financial support in building programs that will support young adults who may not be present in their pews on Sunday, right? So how do we count them? We're still in this model. How do we count them? How do we understand our financial commitment to them? How do we, a whole bunch of things. But I think we can, in some ways, learn from other communities and other faith traditions that are more comfortable with young adults being in that space and who have found a way to still feel that they're part of our community and still included in our congregations in some way, even though they might not be physically present in the way that middle-aged people have come to understand being physically present in congregations. So evangelicals, for instance, if there are a bunch of kids at a Christian rock concert, still consider them part of the worshiping community of that faith tradition. And we're saying that now with something like Lucy Stone, we're still considering that a UU community in the way that we do a congregation, even though it's not, technically speaking, You know, it's not a brick and mortar congregation in that way. So that's going to be our growing edge, I think. If we're asking young adults what they want, are we able to then incorporate what they want into our sense of ourselves?
Right.
And doing so, ask them to remake us to some extent for their, you know, how are we going to incorporate generational change in defining Unitarian Universalism?
What I see across denominations is young people want to go all in. They want to go deep, and they want to make a really deep, a really powerful commitment. And I wonder where we're creating opportunities for them to do that, to truly live out their faith. So I see like summer seminary happening, which is really great, and then, you know, our two cooperatives, but it could be so much more, I think.
I just want to jump in on that. Out of my own experience, I grew up in a Unitarian church. My father was a Unitarian minister until I was about 7 years old, and I left the church in 1969 when I was 20 years old and didn't go near a Unitarian church for 20 years. And the reason was that it was too tepid. I remember I went back to church out of college, and I was real active in the anti-war movement and on my university campus, and I gave what I thought was a barn-burning little talk on one of those summer Sunday morning programs, you know, a barn burner of a talk that should have caused us all to, you know, march out the front door and go, you know, do something. And they all looked at me and said, well, that was really interesting, Tom. Let's go have a cup of coffee. And I just remember thinking, this is not a place that's worth my time. It's like I am ready to commit. And I did. I committed myself to a whole lot of stuff for the next 20 years. But the Unitarian Church was not a place that committed it fostered that commitment. I mean, the reason why I was doing that was because of everything I had learned in a Unitarian church. It's just that it didn't support or nurture that commitment in the present. It was like way too just, well, let's talk about these as interesting ideas and go have a cup of coffee. And who needed that? I didn't need that. So that's why I left in 1989. I came back, you know, and then, you know, as I do, I overcommitted into that too. So at that point, and ended up going to seminary after 6 years. But I hear what you're saying, Bob. People at that age want to make a serious commitment with their life. And our churches are structured pretty much for people to make a fairly contained and controllable commitment in their life. The church is going to take up this much space. There's only this much space in my life for anything other than my work and whatever it is I have to, you know, mow the lawn and all that other kind of stuff. And I'm going to make sure I don't join something that asks for more than that much. And that's the result. We end up with an undercommitted religious movement, except among the professional class, which is like professionally frustrated by the fact that our movement is undercommitted.
I'm very interested in how we are, you know, in the fact that we are trying to move away from being a two-way halfway house. And I'm saying this as someone who is a cradle UU, and this is how we've operated. Either you're a child that we are raising, you know, and when you grow up, you'll decide what religion you are, or you are a come-outer who has come from somewhere else, you know. So we've so long operated on that idea. And I heard something recently that has really fascinated me. And we've had this whole story, right, that you grow up as a UU, and then because you're a flaky 20-year-old, you leave the church. And a person that I was, another cradle UU, apparently looked at some numbers and actually across all of the ages, whether you join a UU church at 5 or at 40, at about year 15, that's when you leave. And it's because we aren't offering, you know, because all of our what we're doing is focused on the new UU. Anything about that, about how do we, what do we do to, for the 15-year UU, no matter their age, to deepen their religious education?
Yeah. Well, I can say I grew up in a non-denominational Baptist African-American environment. I won't even say, you didn't even have to go to church. It was everywhere. And you are expected to be a fully functioning adult in the congregation by 16. You had every opportunity to be a fully functioning, we were orienting people to be leaders and members of the congregation at a much earlier age than we have traditionally done in Unitarian Universalism. And I think that's, to me, that's a lesson learned, that it created a peer leadership group, and it created elders as mentors, so that your responsibility in leadership was to get the next generation prepared to lead this place here now with these people, not to come back later and not to go someplace else. So that way we would have kids who had experience being UUs before they went to college, if that's their choice. So we have a different orientation, a different timeline. I also think we have to tell parents, and I do very directly, please stop giving your kids permission to stop coming. You know, please stop doing that. Stop setting a line. Ask them to be deeper sooner, if that's what it takes. But I think it is a change in our orientation that we have to have.
Well, you know, Natalie, I come from a different cultural environment also, even though I was not brought up in what, you know, traditionally thought of as the black church. But I can remember when I was a director of religious education at the UU Church in Birmingham, and people would come to me and say, well, you know, my child doesn't want to keep coming to church, and what would you do, Jessica, if that was your child? I said, my child doesn't have that option. My child comes to church. Now, when she's in the church, she has some options as to what she can do while she's there. She can go in the worship service, because my daughter, when she reached high school, decided she didn't want to do group things. She didn't want to go into the high school class. So she became the assistant in the lower elementary classroom every single Sunday. Every Sunday, despite other teachers changing out, they always knew there was going to be some familiar face there because my daughter was going to be there. So she had an opportunity to have some options, but going to church was simply not one of those options. I feel totally comfortable doing that because of the culture that I grew up in. But I know that I'm dealing with parents for whom saying, you know, hard and fast, no, you have to do this, is something that they're not comfortable doing.
Not only that, what makes me crazy before we end is usually it's coming of age or OWL. So by the time they're 14, they can opt out of church. Or so it's not even a high bar. It's just as soon as you're done at 13 or 14. So, but this has been such a rich and really wonderful conversation, as usual, on The View. So thank you, Natalie Fenimore and Jessica York, and, of course, our regulars. And next week we will be speaking to UU Rise, an immigrants' rights group. So hope everyone has a very good weekend, and we continue to fight for the good fight, right? Thank you, everybody. Have a great weekend.
This has been a podcast of The View, brought to you by the Church of the Larger Fellowship. To find out more about the CLF, visit questformeaning.org.